From the heartland of America, the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Last hour of the program tonight, Joshua P. Warren's paranormal moment, Are You Possessed? Here's what's happening. The scale of the attack on Hotmail could stretch further than first thought, with accounts on Google and Yahoo now threatened. Microsoft has confirmed that the popular email site had been the target of a scam, which tricked users into revealing their passwords. This led to around 10,000 passwords being posted online. The computer company said their servers were not responsible for the security breach and that individuals had been conned into handing over their details. But it has been reported now that most lists have also been circulated with genuine account information related to email on Google and Yahoo, Comcast, and Earthlink, as well as other third-party webmail services. Neil O'Neill, who is what they call an ethical hacker and digital forensics investigator at secure payment specialist The Logic Group, said up to a million passwords could have been accessed. Kevin Mitnick, I guess we could call you, Kevin, also a ethical hacker, huh?
Hello?
Yeah, Kevin.
Yeah, nowadays you can.
Yep. How many emails do you think have been compromised?
It's really hard to tell. This is what is known as a typical phishing attack, where people are tricked either by clicking on a hyperlink to visit a site that looks and feels like Hotmail, Gmail, or Yahoo, but it really isn't. Or there's a thing called DNS. It's like the 411 of the internet. So like when you go to www.premierradio.com, it has to actually translate to what they call an IP address. And there's tricks hackers can do to redirect you to a fake site that, again, looks like Hotmail, Yahoo, or Gmail, or whatever, Comcast or Earthlink, and then trick you into providing where the victim provides the hacker the credentials. And then the hacker just redirects that person to the real website, and they just think they've entered their password wrong on the first try, and they try again, and everything works, and they're happy, and the hacker has their login and password, and that's how easy it is.
What kind of recommendations for people, Kevin, to avoid this kind of a scam?
Don't click on hyperlinks. If somebody sends you a link in email or in Skype or Instant Messenger, I wouldn't click on them to get to your email. I would like type in the URL in the address line, like https://www.live.com, L-I-V-E.com will get you the Hotmail. That's the best way. And even putting it into your favorites in your browser and just using that and not clicking on any external links that will supposedly bring you to your email. With the DNS issue, it's really it's a little bit more complicated.
All right, Kevin, thank you. Kevin's website, mitnicksecurity.com. Years ago, went to jail as a hacker. He learned his lesson. Now he's a consultant to major corporations worldwide. Egypt says its antiquities department severed ties with France's Louvre Museum because it has refused to return what they've described as stolen artifacts, one of the country's most aggressive attempts to reclaim relics from some of the world's leading Egyptology collections. The Louvre's communications office said the museum is open to returning the artifacts demanded by Egypt, though the decision has to be taken up, what they say, by a special committee. The Egyptian ruling means that no archaeological expeditions connected to France's premier museum will be allowed to work in Egypt. Already, Egypt has suspended an excavation sponsored by the Louvre at the massive necropolis of Saqqara and canceled a lecture in Egypt by a former curator of the museum. Health and Human Services Secretary is saying that the widespread inoculation against the surging swine flu threat is necessary, calling the vaccine safe and secure, unconditionally vouching for the safety of the vaccine. The Health and Services Committee member says it's exactly the same seasonal vaccine that's been made year in and year out. Well, is that true? Sherry Tenpenny, founder of an integrative medicine clinic called OsteoMed2. Sherry, is that true? Is this the same vaccine? I'm confused now.
Well, it is kind of confusing, George, and I've wondered that myself. If it's the same virus, then why did we have to have clinical trials? Why did we have to set this up all across the country? Because it really doesn't seem to be necessary if it was exactly the same thing. But even the flu shots that are the same thing, they've never been they're called Category C drugs, which means they've never been tested if they see if they cause cancer. They've never been tested to see if they cause harm to fetuses and pregnant women. They've never been tested to see whether or not they're going to cause long-term infertility problems with people. That's what a Category C drug is. And all flu shots are labeled that, both the new swine flu and the regular flu shot.
Why is Health and Human Services Secretary Kathleen Sebelius so into this vaccine?
They've really pushed this on the healthcare workers, and I think that the healthcare workers are the bellwether, that they will use that to expand that under the umbrella to start with them and then make it mandatory for everyone. I think that that's what their big push is, and we've got a lot of people out there with unknown problems that could very much be at risk from either the flu shot or from this new swine flu vaccine.
And what do you recommend for people here, Sherry, especially when they don't know if they've got the regular flu or the swine flu? What do they do?
Well, there's two things I'd like to recommend. One is, first of all, majorly take a lot of vitamin D. I mean, you can take 4 to 10,000 units of vitamin D for weeks at a time without showing any signs of toxicity. You can take very high doses of vitamin A and vitamin C and knock this out, and you can also use that to prevent you from getting sick. And I want to encourage all the healthcare workers to stand together and unite and to just say no, because they can't fire them all. There's a healthcare, there's a nurse shortage, and if they stand together and stand their ground, they will win.
All right, Sherry, thank you so much for that update. She's an expert on this, and we turn to her a lot. Ear, nose, and throat specialists are warning that if you drive a convertible, you may want to start wearing earplugs while driving, or you could lose your hearing. Combine the sounds of the engine, wind, road, and traffic, and convertible drivers who drive at speeds of 50 miles an hour or higher are exposing their ears to sounds of 110 decibels. To put it into perspective, they say, the noise level of a normal conversation is 60 decibels. So, take heed. The latest study to suggest an association between the plastics chemical bisphenol A and adverse effects on humans, researchers report that BPA may affect the behavior of little girls. Girls exposed to higher levels of BPA displayed behaviors such as aggression and hyperactivity, according to the study, which is published in the August 6th online edition of Environmental Health Perspectives. Little girls there. U.S. mortgage applications surged last week to the highest since mid-May as consumers sought to take advantage of the lowest interest rates in months. The Mortgage Bankers Association says rates on 30-year fixed-rate mortgages, the most widely used loan, were below 5% for the third straight week and reaching a four-month low. Police in Brazil say a TV crime show host accused of ordering killings to boost his ratings has gone missing after his arrest warrant was issued. Wallace Souza, also a local congressman, had enjoyed parliamentary immunity until last week when the state assembly expelled him. A search is underway for him. Now, he hasn't been charged with anything yet, but it's a bizarre case indeed. And a man in the United Kingdom whose skull was removed after an accident more than a half a century ago has amazed doctors by growing a new one. The 72-year-old man had worn a metal plate to protect his brain since he was involved in a car crash in the 1950s. But when surgeons removed the titanium plate to treat an infection, they were simply astonished to find that he had grown a new skull underneath, and they have no idea why. Up next, our special report now on the search for Bigfoot. We go to the Sanger Paranormal Society next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Throughout the night, we will have a number of guests coming in as we talk about Bigfoot. This hour, two special guests, Jeffrey Gonzalez, founder of the Sanger Paranormal Society in California, also the state section director and investigator for the Mutual UFO Network. He's in charge of all MUFON sightings from Bakersfield to Merced and also has the central coastal cities of California. Jeffrey is here because of the photo of the Bigfoot that was placed there on the website. And David Regoza, he will be with us, inviting the Sanger Paranormal team to investigate the site where the photo was taken. confirming it was not a bear, a tree, a stump, or a shadow. As there's a link and a picture up there now at coasttocoastam.com. And also, David Regoza is a Bigfoot investigator, well-known in the Bigfoot community, has been investigating for 16 years now, with 6 years at the special spot where this photo was taken, which we'll talk about. First of all, Jeffrey. Jeffrey, welcome to the program.
Hello, George.
Good to have you with us. And David, there you are. Hi, David.
Hi, George.
Okay, let's get into this first of all. Jeffrey, you, give me your background, if you would.
Background. I've been doing paranormal investigations for about 8 years. I have a degree in electronics. I founded the Paranormal Sanger Paranormal Society about 3 years ago because Fresno, there was a lot of weird stuff happening out here in the central San Joaquin Valley, from UFOs to hauntings. And then I ran into David on the Bigfoot situation. So, and then I'm also a state section director and investigator for MUFON. So I have a lot of background in the paranormal field.
Great. And David, about yourself.
Well, I've been a high school principal now for over 20 years. The science teacher previous to that. Extensive outdoor background. Been researching this Bigfoot phenomenon for over 20 years also.
So you two are darn serious about the search for Bigfoot. Both of you are pretty no-nonsense. You're schooled in this. What got you both going to look for this creature? What happened? Anything in your lives?
I would let David. David is the actual Bigfoot investigator here, so I'm going to let him go with that.
All right, David.
Well, somewhere about 24 years ago, I was up in the Western Sierras camping, and just to make a long story short, I came across some footprints that I really couldn't make anything of. They weren't bears, too large. They weren't man's, but... so it led me to believe, it might belong to a Bigfoot. But for a long time, I put that back in my mind. And then after several years of, I do a lot of camping up in the hills, I talked to other people, and then I just became more involved and more interested in this phenomenon.
David, tell us about this photograph.
Well, the photograph is kind of interesting because it's an area I've been working for the past 6 years. A little over 6 years ago, I ran into a Native American up in Oakhurst, California, and he told me there was a place that his people believed that they were a family of Bigfoot living, and this was actually in the Sequoia National Forest. I listened to him, and he seemed quite knowledgeable about what he was talking about. I remember his parting words to me were, "If you go there, you'll find what you're looking for." And of course, I'd been looking for this Bigfoot signs of Bigfoot for up to about 15 years at that time, and really had come to the conclusion that I was basically chasing lights, a myth, a legend. And so I went up there not really believing I was going to find anything. But it was interesting. I did take a video up there when I was kind of scanning the area. And in that area, I just happened to just looking in the distance with my camera, which I usually do. I happened to go back into town about a month later, and I happened to catch, two figures in the background. They're not very conclusive, but they were indeed bipeds. So, of course, after that, I spent a lot of time up there. In fact, I spent maybe 2 to 3 years going up there maybe 3 times a month on the weekend. So I spent a considerable amount of time up there.
Well, I've been looking at this photograph all night, and it doesn't look like a bear or a tree or a tree stump at all or a shadow. It is bizarre. What do you think it is, David?
Well, it's kind of interesting because that weekend, it was a Memorial Day weekend, myself and four other individuals were up there, including Jeffrey, and we had spent one night close to the Kings Canyon National Park with nothing happening. So I took these folks over to the spot that I've been working, and that was a Saturday night, and we've been barbecuing, and that's something we normally don't do. Usually we just go there and have a cold meal and just kind of sit around and sometimes do some night calls and trying to bring these in. But that evening we decided to cook something, and about 10:30 at night I decided to do some whoop calls, and I really didn't expect anything in return because I usually don't get anything. And in the distance we heard some whoops, howls, actually seemed to be far off across the valley we were at, and for about 5-6 minutes we heard nothing. Then we heard the howls no more than about 400 yards from us, and it appeared there was two of them because they seemed to be communicating back and forth, and they seemed like they were down this
this ridge from us, and they seem to split and go different directions. So for about 2.5 hours to 3 hours that evening, you know, we felt like we were being circled. We could hear them, but we certainly, you know, cannot see them. And they made it, you know, they didn't make any attempts of trying to be stealthy, but really letting us know that they were there. Were they bear? We don't know. Were they big feet? We were hoping they were, but, you know, it was kind of a pretty intense situation for 2.5 to 3 hours. And the next day, we ended up setting up our cameras, and when we went back to pick up the cameras about 3 weeks later, that's when we discovered the, you know, the photo.
And tell us how these trail cameras work, David.
Well, they're, you know, they're basically heat sensored, heat sensor and motion sensor also. They send out an infrared beam, and whatever breaks that beam, of course, is going to take your pictures.
If a rabbit hops by, it'll take its picture, right?
Yes, if it breaks the beam. Basically, it has to be placed at the right height. And what I try to do is I try to catch most of the game that come through there. So generally, I set my cameras up about 2.5 feet high.
Okay, and how many cameras did you have out there?
I believe that week we had about 6 cameras up that week. And this past summer, beginning in, I'd say like in May, even before this, we were getting a lot of strange figures, shadows for our cameras.
Jeffrey, what do you think of this photograph? What's your impression?
Well, I was there, like David said, the night that we called Bigfoot came to our campsite, and we set up the cameras. We went back, you know, a couple weeks later, and we downloaded the memory cards onto my computer first that day, and we went through them, and we didn't see anything of it. And then about 2 days later, David called me, and he said, "Hey, I was going over this memory card and the pictures. You better take a look at number so-and-so and look at the top left-hand corner." And I had all the pictures already downloaded on my computer, so I was watching TV. I quickly loaded up the pictures. I looked at it, and I went, "Holy smokes." And I saw the picture, and I said, "You know what? That's not a bear, and that's not a person in a freaking costume, because we're 2.5 hours east of Fresno in the middle of nowhere." This was the first time I was there with David, and it was, you know, he took dirt roads, side streets. I mean, we're in the middle of nowhere, and I'm going, that's got to be Bigfoot. That just got to be Bigfoot. So I told David, you know, in order to really figure this thing out, let me take my crew up there and let me do a thorough investigation with my crew. And so we went back up there a couple of weeks later, and, you know, we took many photos of the spot, videos. We took measurements, looked for footprints. And, you know, this photo is taken at a 45-degree angle. Now, as you're looking at the photo, obviously you see a tree right in back of it, of the Bigfoot. But you have to understand that this photo is about 100 feet away. The object is about 100 feet away from the camera. So there's a lot of spaces in between. So if I go to that exact spot where that Bigfoot is, there's no tree behind it. Okay, so a lot of people were saying, "Well, it's just a tree standing up, rubbing it behind on a tree." Well, there's no tree there, and it's at a 45-degree angle. So, you know, my quote on my website saying, you know, if this is a bear walking up a hill on a 45-degree angle, well, then we better go get it, because it needs to be in the circus.
Did your group find any other evidence, Jeff?
The location where the object is standing, there is very high, leaves and twigs and it's stacked up about a foot high, so there was no footprint that we could find. And we looked for hair samples. We could not find any hair samples. So at that part, no, we didn't find any actual evidence of footprints or hair samples.
Have you been able to make any conclusions, Jeffrey?
Yes. As a paranormal investigator, and I've been doing, like, you know, investigating for 7 years, and I, you know, also with MUFON, so I know how to investigate something. And, you know, a lot of people were saying, you know, it's a shadow. It's a tree. It's a tree stump. It's a bear. I took all those theories, and I laid it out on the table, and I debunked every single one of them. It cannot be a shadow, because if you're looking at the object, you can see the sun on top of the head of this object, and you can see it. It's a 3D object, so it's not a shadow. It's not a tree stump, because we went back to the same location. there's no tree stump, okay? It's not a tree because, again, there's nothing there in the same place. And it's not a bear because I measured the height. As you're looking at the object, the leaves and the branches that are blocking the object's head, I measured it with a measuring tape, and it measured 8 to 9 feet tall.
Wow. All right, more with you, David Regoza and Jeffrey Gonzalez. The Search for Bigfoot on Coast to Coast AM. And next hour with our Bigfoot extravaganza, Stan Courtney joins us next hour, and he's bringing along some audio recordings of sounds of some unknown animal. That'll be next hour. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Jeffrey Gonzalez with us this hour, along with David Regoza. Jeffrey, tell us a little bit about the Sanger Paranormal Society.
Sanger Paranormal Society I put together about 3.5 years ago. Because paranormal is pretty much my life. You know, I've been a fan of paranormal since I was a kid, watching Project Blue Book and Kolchak the Night Stalker and all those great shows. And since I had some background in electronics and security cameras, and I decided, you know what, I'm just going to put something together and see what I can find out there in this world of ours. And I've been investigating now, like I said, for 3.5 years. UFOs, hauntings. The Bigfoot thing just came out of just by luck. You know, somebody told me
came out of the woods, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's like somebody introduced me to David, and you know, that's one of the things I've always wanted to do was to go out and investigate and look for Bigfoot. And somebody told me we had a highly respected veteran Bigfoot investigator in Fresno, and I said, well, where in the heck is he? And sure enough, you know, they found David, and David, you know, took me up that Memorial Day weekend, and there you go. We got this photo. So,
David, you've been investigating Bigfoot for at least 16 years. Have you ever come across a situation where you felt in trouble or threatened or anything like that?
You know, George, I never really felt threatened. There was a time, though, sometime in December when, about 3 years ago, when myself and another friend were taking up apples up to a spot where we had set some cameras. And there it was quite snowed in and cold, and it's hard to get back there. The person I was with was in great shape, immaculate shape, in fact. He's a physical trainer. And I remember we got to the cameras, and he was really huffing and puffing, and he looked like he was ready to hyperventilate, and he said he just was out of it. And out of the both of us, of course, you know, his fitness was well beyond mine. I was not yet high and breathing hard. But I kind of got a sense that for some reason that we needed to put the apples down and just to get out of there as soon as we can. And at that time then, I began to hyperventilate also. And, you know, I've read many times and talked to other folks also about, you know, Big Feet being able to just, you know, to communicate with you was telepathy or send infrasounds. And I'm not sure if that's what happened to me, but that was the only time I felt I really needed to get out of the area. Other than that, you know, we've been in situations up there that we've had them stalk us. We've had them, you know, come up close to us. We've had several sightings up there. You know, so there's been other times that we could have felt threatened, but we just don't do that. And I think possibly being up there quite a bit with them, I just feel a little more comfortable up there.
David, I had a call a couple nights ago when we had some open lines, and this was an incredible story, but I've never heard this before. And the person was saying that when he was younger, he and his brother were in their room of a mobile home. Parents were asleep with a baby. The family was, you know, pretty tight. And he said in the wee hours, he woke up to a sound of a crash of an arm, which he said was like a Bigfoot arm, through the window, trying to grab his brother. He woke up screaming, pulled his brother off the bed, went and got the parents. And apparently his dad went outside and just saw a huge 7-plus-foot creature run off into the woods. Have you ever heard of a story where a Bigfoot tried to take a person or a kid?
I have up in the Kings County National Forest. There's you know, quite a bit of old stories come out of the Kings County National Park, especially among some old Boy Scout camps. But there was an incident up there where one of the group masters or Boy Scout masters was actually camping by himself on a side of a mountain. he said he was picked up three times by a Bigfoot and then also sat down. We actually, that Memorial Day weekend when I first took Jeffrey up, that's the site that we visited. Hopefully we could have some kind of contact there. But it was really, you know, it was kind of an old report. I think it was like 25 years old. So there was no action. But yes, I have heard that before.
What would the Bigfoot want with a little child?
You know what? I do know from experience that they seem to be attracted to children and women. And I'm not real sure. Maybe it's because they're so different. And maybe I have a feeling being up there that these animals are highly intelligent, of course, that they may have the specialized ability to, you know, sense danger, of course, like most animals, maybe even read thoughts or even see auras around our bodies. You know, and of course, there's all kinds of theories behind that. But there's a lot of theories of why they seem to be highly wanting to be highly interactive with women and also children.
But you don't see them wanting to hurt the child or the woman?
No, I think if that was the case, we'd have a lot of people disappearing up in the high Sierras because there's thousands of folks up there each summer.
We have heard all kinds of theories. Bigfoot is a creature. It's the missing link. Always has been on this planet. Could be extraterrestrials. Could be dimensional figures. I tend to think that we're talking about a physical creature that just hasn't been truly discovered yet on this planet. What's your take, David, and you, Jeff?
George, I think you're right. I think it is the flesh and blood. I've been up there for a long time, you know, looking for this. I have a lot of good friends in the Bigfoot community who spent hours, months, you know, looking for this animal, spending thousands of their own dollars. And the bottom line is, you know, the layperson like myself who's professional or work concerned, we just don't have the resources to fund a project that would take several years actually to kind of solve this problem. And most of us are probably, if you lumped all the weekends together, we might be lucky to get maybe 6 months out in the field, you know, during a lifetime really. But we just don't have the time nor the funding to, you know, what it's going to take. But I do know, being up there and some of the things that I've seen up in those hills, leads me to tend that, they really have some specialized abilities, like one, you know, be able to camouflage into their environment, much like a chameleon, or even more so. And this is kind of out there because I like to keep a scientific mind because that's what I was, a science teacher for quite a while. I'm an administrator, but the Indians, of course, believe this, and I've talked to, I think, credible witnesses that have actually seen Bigfoot disappeared in front of them, and you know, and that's kind of out there, but. You know what, maybe they do, you know, maybe this is just a specialized skill they have or ability. And yeah. You know, much like some of the animals that we're starting to find out in science now.
And Jeffrey, your take through the eyes of a paranormal investigator. What do you think this creature is?
I definitely think it's, you know, since you mentioned that, what if, you know, it is really something that we're not sure of. And that weekend that the photos were taken of that Bigfoot, other photos were also taken on some other cameras as well. And on my website, there are some lights that are beaming down from above down to the ground that we captured on some of the cameras. And so a lot of people seem to think that for some reason, when you see a Bigfoot up in the hills, sometimes you see also lights in the skies. So a lot of people think that maybe it has to do something with UFOs, and that is has been out there for a long period of time. And since we capture those lights on the camera, you know, there's a very good possibility of that. You know, these lights are, you know, you got to remember that, you know, this is a forest. You know, these lights, there's no way it can be a helicopter. There's no way it could be a flashlight because it's at, you know, 12 o'clock in the morning when no one is there. So, you know, these lights seem to come out of nowhere and then also in the same location where the Bigfoot photo was taken. So, you know, there might be an actual, you know, connection. So it's hard to say.
David, we've heard the stories of the abominable snowman in the Himalayas, the stories of Yetis, all these incredible witnesses from years gone back. I remember being interested in this entire genre. when I heard of the abominable snowman. Are we talking about the same creature? Is Sasquatch, what we see here in North America, the same as what they're seeing in the Himalayas and other regions of this planet?
I believe so. I believe that what we're reporting throughout the world basically are just, you know, some species and subspecies of the same animal.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. Maybe indeed too, the missing link. You know, if it seems to have or show more intelligence than a chimp or a gorilla, don't you think?
Way beyond. In fact, you know,
maybe more than a man.
Well, and that's where I go back to, you know, having these specialized skills, because he's been so elusive for such a long time. We're talking about some pretty intelligent folks I ran across trying to capture this animal, and we're able to capture many times human beings on these cameras, even though they're trying to be stealthy sometimes. And generally, they're hunters or hikers coming through, and we'll catch them. But we, you know, I have been setting up cameras up for 6 years, and so I believe that these creatures up there have actually gotten used to the cameras, and so we have quite a few pictures of, you know, of unknown shadows. Just recently we got a picture of a hand, and the interesting thing about it is that the thumb seems to be more receded towards the base of the palm, you know, much like a primate. And so that was quite interesting. We also have a shoulder shot, so I believe that because these cameras are out there so often, these things are not as shy as the cameras that they used to be. And so I'm hoping that you know, continued use of these cameras out there, that eventually we will get that good shot as that one shot.
There's a baby Bigfoot in the background.
There's a baby Bigfoot. He wants to go to sleep.
Can this photograph be sharpened up at all with Photoshop or anything like that, where it can be cleaned up? Is that possible, David?
I think it can, but is it conclusive? No, it's not, because we know in the scientific world what they want is actually a body or at least some physical matter, and right now we don't have that.
David, several months ago, there was a group down in the South, a police officer and a corrections officer who claimed that they had a Bigfoot. They had him on ice. Turned out to be a costume. We found the costume maker, and they, you know, stuffed it with deer guts and things like that. How do you react to those kinds of hoaxes? I mean, they obviously put a damper on good research, but it's got to really tick off good researchers like yourself, does it?
Yes, well, it is a big setback for us because we know how the scientific community looks at recreational Bigfoot hunters, because that's what they consider us, even though we, you know, some of us are highly educated and we're very prominent in the communities, but you know, it just takes us back a great, great big step. And especially when you do come up with photos like the one we have, you know, once again, you know, their goal is, well, you know, these guys just hoaxed us, and here's another one coming up.
Well, except you two aren't asking for anything. You know, you're not trying to sell this for $300,000 and trying to do this. And like you said, funding is difficult. And you have to be part-time investigators. You can't live on searching for Bigfoot. There's no money in it.
No, there's not. But if there's anyone interested in trying to donate some real nice equipment, we'll certainly take them up on it. That's for sure.
And you know what? And that's what you should get. I mean, some special funding, not a lot for your travel expenses and things like that. And someone who is an equipment manufacturer, maybe with some high-speed equipment, who can get it to you, and let's find out what's going on out there. I am amazed, though, David and Jeffrey, that mainstream science hasn't spent the money to go out and really do its homework and investigate for this creature. I mean, even in Florida, as we talk about that giant monkey that some people claim is down there, I mean, science really needs to go out there and investigate, and they're not doing that. Why not?
Well, there's a lot of reasons why. In fact, I've talked to many Forest Department personnel, and they have their reasons. And, you know, some people have theories that they feel that if the government acknowledged that there is Bigfoot, that, you know, there'll be some, you know, some hysteria, you know, folks not wanting to be in the mountains with this large animal. And then also the financial burden, of course, on the, if there is a Bigfoot, on the government, because now they'll have to go ahead and, section off, you know, huge amounts of forest just to keep this creature alive.
Absolutely. Then what's next for you, Jeffrey, with your investigations?
I plan to go back up with David pretty soon. You know, we're going to keep going back up there, and we're going to keep putting up those cameras. And I'm also doing a lot of cases for MUFON out here in California, especially in the Fresno area. So I'm very busy when it comes to paranormal right now. So I'm loving every minute of it.
David, in the few minutes we have left, take us through a Bigfoot investigation. Kind of paint pictures for us here while your heart, I'm sure, is racing while you're out there. What do you do? How do you do this?
Well, there's actually about two spots that I have. The first thing I try to do is that I have to understand that, first of all, that when I'm out there, I'm not in control. That basically, if they want me to see them or know they're there, they're going to allow them. I'm not going to sneak up on them. It's very, very rare that's going to happen. I know the forest that I'm in because I've been there for a long time now, but they know it better than I do. So the first thing is I plan out where I want to go and where I want to set my cameras. And basically, when I come into the forest, of course, the first thing I tell myself and also the folks I'm with is, listen, you know what, if you're an aggressive person, we're probably going to have a lot of luck out here. So we come in here, you know, lay down all your machismo. When I come in here, as humble as you can, and remember that if they want to show themselves to us or make them known to us, they'll allow us. So basically, we're at their will, you know, as far as them introducing themselves to us. So basically, you know, my goal is to set the cameras up, and then I start tracking. Also, once the cameras are up, I'll start tracking, looking for footprints, and then later on in the afternoon, what I'll do is I'll start doing some wood knocking. And generally, 99% of the time we get up, we're going to be a lot of wood knocking up there.
Do you get butterflies out there in the woods?
You know what? There's one section that we go into. It's a very eerie part of the forest. It's a very old part of the forest, and that's where we're getting a lot of these strange, you know, pictures and shadows and lights up there. And it's very eerie. In fact, we go up there with somebody with four or five men, and you know, we are carrying a lot of bear up there. We're not carrying for Bigfoot, but we have a lot of running with bear up there. So, yeah, it's very eerie. And there are times there, you know, there are butterflies. And so sometimes we hear footsteps behind us, and we look, and we can't see anybody. But, yeah, we can hear it.
Have you ever heard footsteps outside your tents, for example?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Breathing, and I've heard... I tell you, there was one night I was on the one night I took up my Jeep up there, and I was up alone, and I actually heard something standing over the Jeep, you know, and I was in the bed in the back, just breathing over me, and I thought it was a dream. So I opened my eyes up, and guess what? It wasn't a dream. So what I did here after I made a move to get my gun, because I wasn't quite sure what it was, I thought it was a bear. I could hear footsteps running away from me, so that kind of kept me up all night.
You know, David, you're out there in the woods a lot. Something's going on with the animals. I had an animal expert on recently as we talked about why people are being mauled by animals recently. But I don't know. I think they sense something. I think there's something going on. I can't put my finger on it, but I think the animals sense it, much like the elephants did and the tigers did in Indonesia during that incredible quake tsunami. Remember that? How they just took off and head for the hills.
Yes.
I think animals are sensing things these days. Do you get that feeling?
Well, I think, I think like all animals, that they have the unique ability to know when to leave them and when to, of course, stand and fight, just like we have the fight or flight, you know, situation.
Jeffrey, if people want more information on the Sanger Paranormal Society or they want to contribute or be part of it, what do they do?
SangerParanormalSociety.com. The website, pictures are all on there. We took many photographs of the site of where the location of the Bigfoot. It's all there for anybody to see and make your own judgment. Like I said, it's not all the above. It's only one thing that it could be, and it's Bigfoot. And I also have a special hotline dedicated for myself for a UFO hotline. So if anybody sees anything out of the ordinary flying through our skies in California, especially the central San Joaquin Valley, give me a buzz.
Hey, Jeffrey, do you think we're going to get disclosure soon?
You know what? Oh, I got my fingers crossed. it's just weird how, you know, there's a lot of things happening now. There's a lot more sightings, and I have a feeling, give us a couple more years, I got a feeling something's going to happen.
All right, you two, thank you for spending the hour with me. Up next, Stan Courtney. We've got some incredible audio sounds of some kind of a creature, And then we're going to be taking your phone calls as well over the next couple hours with our various guests on Bigfoot, followed by Joshua P. Warren and his paranormal moment next on Coast to Coast AM.